Welcome to the Breakout Growth Podcast, where Sean Ellis and Ethan Garr interview leaders from the world's fastest-growing companies to get to the heart of what's really driving their growth. And now, here are your hosts, Sean Ellis and Ethan Garr.
In this week's episode of the Breakout Growth Podcast, Ethan Garr and I chat with Jonathan Betcher, president of Shark Sports and Entertainment. The flagship brand in Jonathan's organization is the National Hockey League's San Jose Sharks. So we thought it'd be pretty interesting to see how a sports organization approaches growth and if it's different from what we typically see in the tech industry. To be honest, we got quite a bit more than we bargained for. Right, Ethan?
Oh, yeah. This one was a lot of fun. I think our listeners are going to love it. I mean, first of all, we learned that the Sharks organization isn't just one sports team. It's actually multiple sports teams, plural. And it's an entertainment engine. It's a physical building and plants. It's concerts and events. And it's a lot of people. And really, it's fans of all types.
Yep. I think it's the diversity of fans from their highly variable interests of excitement and interest in the sport to the unique backgrounds and attributes that they, it's one of those things that really creates an exciting set of challenges and opportunities around growth. And within that, there's just a lot of interesting areas to delve into.
Yeah. For me, coming from a mobile app background where you often have like just a single job to be done, the must-have experience usually can be pretty well defined. You know, if your app says it's going to stop robocalls, that's probably where the experience starts, right?
It better anyway.
Right. But in entertainment, it's not really that simple. And that was kind of eye-opening for me. I mean, you know, imagine trying to dial in the must-have experience for that rabid hockey fan who paints her face for every game while making sure that the person sitting next to her has just as good a time at the event, even though she's never been to a game before, doesn't know the rules, and is there because, you know, it's casual. She's there because maybe her company gave her a couple of free tickets and she's there to just see what it's like.
Yeah. And, you know, it's definitely complex. And what I found amazing is that Jonathan and his team, you know, they're figuring all of this out using the same types of approaches that we use in tech and other industries. I mean, he talks about freemium. He talks about experiments. And clearly, you know, when he uses the frame, the growth mindset, it's not just fluff. He's really approaching things from that perspective. And to be honest, it makes sense. He's driving this organization in San Jose, which is the heart of Silicon Valley. So it's not just a sports organization. It's a sports organization that's in the heart of Silicon Valley, surrounded by tech people, and probably a lot of their customers are tech people. And so, and probably a lot of the team like him have a background in tech. So he's not just the CEO of a sports organization or a president of a sports organization. He's actually been a three-time startup CEO. He was also the CMO at SAP. And yes, they are the ones that are sponsoring this episode. But you can just tell from everything that he does, his approach is about data and experimentation.
And it's also about culture, right? I mean, he seems acutely aware that the Sharks' future is going to be influenced and really driven by digital experiences. And he's kind of working to create that culture within his team where the organization is willing to take risks, try new things to embrace that digital transformation on a continuing basis. You know, and he describes what he calls the pioneer mindset that he's trying to align his team around so that they can pioneer the future of sports entertainment. And as he says, when you're a pioneer, you know which direction you're trying to go, but there's no map that's going to get you there.
Right. Well, there might not be a map. There are some tools and partners that might be helpful along the way. So before we jump in with Jonathan, we want to invite our listeners to check out the sponsor for this week's episode. SAP is the world's leading provider of enterprise application software, enabling hypergrowth companies to scale quickly to achieve their growth ambition with their agile, cost-effective, easy-to-implement cloud solutions. If you are working to power breakout growth success in your business, please check out sap.com/SME.
Nice segue there, Sean. I like that one. Should we jump into it?
Yeah, let's do it. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the Breakout Growth Podcast.
Hey, Sean, great to be on with you today.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ethan. Hey, Ethan.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Jonathan. Good to be here.
Yeah, so Ethan's had an exciting last few days being down in Florida, so hopefully his connectivity and everything else will be good for this. We're trying some new equipment today, but so far so good.
Yeah. It's my penalty for trying to take my family to the happiest place on earth.
Yeah. There's no room in life for vacations and family time. So.
Ethan, I can confirm that California is a happier place than Florida. So yeah, you went to the wrong one.
I'll actually agree with you there.
We've got a few more years before we get hurricanes in California. So based on global warming. Jonathan, if you could maybe give us a quick introduction. Yeah, you're president of the Sharks Sports and Entertainment. Most of us are going to be familiar with San Jose Sharks as the kind of main part of that. But can you give us maybe a bit more of an introduction on what the organization looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, I'm president of something called Sharks Sports and Entertainment, which is the parent organization of the NHL, the National Hockey League, San Jose Sharks. We also have an AHL team. You can think of that as a minor league team called the San Jose Barracuda. We have four buildings so far in our network of ice facilities, one of which called Sharks Ice in San Jose is the largest indoor ice recreational center in North America. And we have a nonprofit foundation as well. But we're in a growth mindset. I guess we'll probably get there. We're expanding to the digital world. I think I have to say the word metaverse at some point, but only if you make me. And we're opening more physical buildings also.
Perfect.
Awesome. So,
by the way, I should also say I'm a strange person to be in sports because I spent most of my life as a tech career, but maybe we'll get to that. I don't know.
Actually, I think that's where we're headed right now.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I'd love to get a little bit of a sense of your journey. How did you get here and what is your background?
Yeah, so kids don't try this at home is maybe the way to start this conversation. So I started off life as a programmer. I have a cog science, what these days we'd call machine learning AI background. I thought I was going to map using neural networks, and I was very interested in speech recognition as well. One of the tough problems back in the day was the phrase, please write Mr. Right right now. Context-sensitive grammars, the word right means three different things. And the problem is that programming, at least at the time, was such a solo sport, and I'm very much of a person that loves interactions, et cetera. So I lasted probably a couple of years as a programmer. From there, got into pre-sales, helping people solve problems with technology, which actually brought me into marketing, or what now we might call growth hacking. Thank you, Sean. product-led marketing, I guess, for lack of a better phrase than anything else. And then I did three-time startup CEO. My last startup got acquired by SAP, the very large multinational organization. I joke at the time I got acquired, there were 35,000 people at SAP, which was bigger than the town I grew up in. SAP is now more than 100,000 people. So that was definitely a growth as well. About 4.5 years ago, I decided to take a step back from technology. I'd flown like 2 million miles in 7 years and visited 40 countries. Took some time off, wasn't sure what to do, and got a call to say, would you like to grow Shark Sports and Entertainment? And hockey's my favorite sport, even though it's the one I'm personally at the worst at. I've been a season ticket holder of this franchise for probably a decade before I joined. And in some sense, I can say all the jobs I had has been trying to connect customers to experiences. And so this is the ultimate customer experience job, but we'll maybe get to that as well.
So, such an interesting background for them to want to reach out to you and say, yeah, do you want to take the helm here? What was it about your background, do you think, that stood out to them?
Yeah, well, a couple things. And I'll give you maybe the grand unveil at the very end of the short answer. The first is, I at one point was the chief marketing officer for SAP. And part of that, I did two things that were relevant. One is we renamed the building that I now am sitting in that the Sharks play in, from HP Pavilion to SAP Center. So my name's on that contract. So I knew something about the operations of this building long before I got here. Two is I built, with some help from other people, I built a sports vertical at SAP using technology, originally analytics. I'm an analytics guy by background, help teams make better decision. Not so much Moneyball, which that movie is a bit exaggerated, but it's still a fun movie, but more from an operational point of view, an internal point of view, et cetera. So we did a lot with analytics in the NBA, the NFL, Major League, and in hockey. And so I was reasonably well-known, not that famous, but reasonably well-known. And the owner of Shark Sports and Entertainment, my boss, is one of the founders of SAP. So he met me during my SAP career.
Gotcha. Oh, now it makes a lot more sense of where the, I mean, it shows how important relationships can be. And obviously somewhere along the way, someone heard that you're probably that you're a hockey fan, and if you're passionate about the sport and with everything else that you bring to it, it made a little more sense that you'd be a good fit for it.
It does indeed. And I still think at the time I was named, some people would say, but he's a tech guy, not a sports guy, because industries tend to promote their own. But I think we're seeing a lot across many industries, not just sports and entertainment, of cross-pollination, of taking ideas from one industry and trying to try that in another. And that's really a lot about what I've been, experimental mindset, if you will.
Yeah, especially I think on the ownership side, you see a lot of tech people that have moved into kind of owner. I mean, obviously Mark Cuban being one that stands out a lot, but obviously tech and money tend to go together, and ownership and money go together. So,
I think the future of sports and entertainment is technology driven. I mean, there's a phrase we used to use all the time, which is directionally accurate, not precise, which is every company in every industry has to reinvent itself with tech, which I definitely believe in. Sports and entertainment and maybe government are one of the last industries to reinvent themselves with tech, but that's happening as well.
Mm-hmm. So Ethan, do you have any more questions about sort of background before I jump into how they're approaching growth?
No, it's something to
Great. So obviously the topic of this podcast centers around growth. And
this is my shock face.
Exactly. So I'm curious, when you think about growth for a sports organization, what does that look like? How are you thinking about that? How is that similar or different from really maybe in the tech world?
So maybe myth bust for a second. I don't consider myself a sports organization. I'll say, I mean, for years we were called Silicon Valley or Shark Sports and Entertainment, and sports was capital letters and entertainment was little letters. But we actually deliver as much entertainment, concerts, family events, et cetera, as we do hockey games as well. And I think maybe our future should be thought of as more of a content factory than a mud of which is live than sports or entertainment. But ignoring that, your question still stands. I think many of the measures are very similar to ones you've probably talked about. Well, I've heard you talk about it multiple times on this show as well, but different nuances. I mean, we'll start with the obvious one, which is brand, which is there are lots of measures of reach. One of the interesting things, though, when we talk about measures of reach for us is the distinction of indirect versus direct reach. There's always a combination that people talk about. Can they turn their customers into fans? In a very funny sense, we do the reverse. Can we turn our fans into customers? Because the vast majority of people that are fans of our franchise do not necessarily have a direct relationship with us. They're not physically in our building. They're watching television or some digital version of that as well. They're out of market, et cetera. So we don't necessarily have a one-to-one relationship with them. And so one of the things I've got to figure out to change those reach metrics is how do we disintermediate some of the middle people as well. As an example, tomorrow we're all getting on a plane and going to Europe. We're playing a preseason game in Berlin and then two regular season games in Prague. There's some very loyal fans there that have never been customers of mine, right? So now we've built an out-of-market club. We call it the 1991 Club in order to relate with them more directly as opposed to indirectly.
Yeah, I used to live in Eastern Europe, so I know the Czechs are big fans of hockey.
They are indeed.
And so much of the NHL is talent from around the world, so it's not surprising that there would be some fans there.
Yeah, So a raw measure of reach of, 2 million eyeballs to us matters a lot less to who's actually touching those eyeballs. And are we doing it through our direct mechanisms or through some third party as well? And that's one way to do it. Another way to think about it is, again, a more of a segmentation question, which is who are those audiences? We've done a very nice job of expanding the sport to what the hockey might call non-traditional audiences. Something like 45% of our season ticket members are women, whereas hockey is traditionally thought of as a white male sport. We have a very large and growing Hispanic Latino audience, on par with most U.S. soccer teams, if you will, as well. We've doubled down on the South Asian audience as well. And we try to do this in an authentic way. For example, we have our own, I hate to call it this, but it's the first phrase that comes to mind, sub-brand called Los Tiburones, which is Spanish for sharks. It has its own social presence. It has its own, not not necessarily heritage night, although we do that as well, because that becomes a one-off cultural appropriation thing, but more of a, we actually reinterpret the logo. You might actually, I don't know if you can see it on the table behind me, which is a more authentic version of our classic logo. Don't change the logo, everyone tells us, but we do it. We actually change it for particular audiences. For example, here in Northern California, Santa Cruz is very much of a skater community.
Right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
We want to move into Santa Cruz brand. Right. We actually mashed up the Santa Cruz brand with our own brand and created a sub brand of our logo for that community as well.
Is what you're describing, this sort of digital transformation, something you see consistently across the NHL, or is it more specific to the Sharks? Because, and is that related to your where you're located?
Yeah, so I think it's on the spectrum. Is everybody doing it, or are we the only ones doing it? It's closer to we're one of the few teams that are doing this. You know, the traditional marketing statement, particularly if you're a brand marketer, is, you know, your logo is your logo, and become the logo police. Make sure it's never used, put on the wrong background, et cetera. And I'm of the belief, both in my history and in this, which is, as long as it's recognizable and attributable, then stretch your logo in ways you never thought it was perfect. Make it authentic and deep into the communities you're trying to serve. Northern California is one of the most culturally diverse places on this planet. So why not take advantage of that rather than saying, sorry, we are the only ones who get to decide what it means to have affinity for our brand?
It's funny because my question that I was going to ask you was, you know, there's very different in sports, and I'm realizing as you're saying this that you're an entertainment organization, not a sports organization. But in sports, you have very different kinds of fans. You have, when it comes to hockey, I would say I'm sort of middle of the road between casual and hardcore. I would say I'm more casual. Sounds like you're a hardcore fan. I have friends who are like, they're nutcases, and I would never, you know, never be caught dead at a game with them. But it really runs the gamut. And my question was going to be, how do you speak to those different audiences? And I think you have a story that you mentioned to me in an earlier conversation that might be interesting here about just how different it is to talk to those different, but now as you're explaining this, it's even more, it's not just about casual versus serious fans. It's about casual fans within certain segmentations. Can you expand upon that a little bit and how you're reaching those different organizations different users?
Sean, this is called a setup from Ethan. He knows a story that I'm going to tell, and so he's encouraging me to tell it. So, I appreciate that. I hope I'm telling the right story that you wanted me to tell. So when I got here, the brand ethos of the Sharks was captured in the phrase Sharks for Life. You can go onto Twitter or any other social platform, you'd actually see hashtag Sharks for Life. And it was very much of targeted at those fanatical fans, those that are very deep affinity, that you know, track players and know their friends and et cetera. And it was fantastic. And look, as a longtime tech entrepreneur and someone that knows marketing, you don't really get that kind of affinity in a B2B, a business to business sense. It's very much of a consumer based brand. And in fact, my first year here, we went deep in the playoffs. And so I had this crazy idea, or myself and the team, I said, we should offer free tattoos to fans before the playoff starts. And I don't mean the henna tattoos that wash off after a week. I mean actual authentic tattoos. So we went to three local tattoo parlors here in San Jose, and we negotiated, I don't remember the exact numbers anymore. I think each of them were going to give away 50 tattoos to the first 50 people that showed up. And it was going to be like on a Thursday, a Friday, and a Saturday. And 150 people lined up overnight before the first tattoo parlor opened. Like 800 people showed up to get the 50 tattoos.
That's how Sean ended up with his face tattoo, by the way.
I won't make any movie references. Because, and no, that's boxing, not hockey, where it's on face tattoo, right? And part of me freaked out in two different ways. One is, holy crap. I mean, my entire life of thinking about product-led growth, it never occurred to me that someone would brand themselves literally with your on their body, right? This is fantastic. And so we were crowing about this. I think I might even have written an article and contributed to one of the sports magazines. Here's how deep our brand affinity is. And then that summer, we do what I've done many times in a career. I'm sure many of your readers and audience has done as well, which is we did a customer panel, a real life one, as opposed to a hybrid one. And we brought in, I can't remember, 30-ish or so fans, some of which were hardcore, some were modest, et cetera. And I think we kind of crowed about this. And a couple of fans raised their hand and said, yeah, we didn't like that at all. I'm like, what do you mean if you didn't like that at all? And go, well, we're a little bit put off by your brand ethos because I'm not sure I'm ready to be a shark for life. I'm happy to come to a couple of games. I'll watch you on TV, but the barrier of actually burning ink into my skin, if that's what it takes to actually be a customer of yours and for you to recognize me,
makes it almost too clicky.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we were pushing people away unknowingly.
Yeah.
And so we actually changed the brand ethos to Teal Together. There's room in this for everyone, regardless of whether you're a first time fan or a rabid fan, if you've lived in Silicon Valley your whole life since Apple meant an orchard and not a company, or you've just gotten off a plane, you're coming here. We don't care what your background is, ethnicity, et cetera. There's room for you. And we'll try to treat you authentically so that you feel like you're included in the game and environment and the entertainment that we love. And we're now 3.5 years into that. Oh, yeah. We even turned over our official fan clubs to different fans. And now there's probably 7 or 8 different fan clubs all focused on different things. So rather than us trying to control the narrative, we let them control the narrative and self-organize. It worked out really well.
I think it's so interesting with hockey because I would be someone who is not a hockey fan traditionally, but I remember I was in Boston and just a corporate event ended up going to a Bruins game and you know, a lot of those, like, you don't even look at the game, you're just socializing and eating some food, and I found myself get pulled into it. And when the Olympics come around, my wife is Russian, and so, like, she's a big hockey fan, and so you know, it's always an exciting time in our household when there's any kind of international sports going on. And so and then the other thing that I've seen is a lot of people that I grew up with in Southern California, I never heard any of them talk about hockey, but now I see them as hardcore hockey fans, like season ticket holders, and so it is. I think it is a sport that is so engaging and is really easy to get your head around versus like a football or a baseball for a foreigner that kind of like, what is this thing? You can get into it pretty quickly, and it's cool to see actually how easily fans do get converted into really liking the sports side of the sport and entertainment business.
So I'm going to draw an analogy to growth hacking and SaaS business models and stuff like that, which is a bit of a stretch, but it works for me given my background, which is the challenge with hockey with a growth mindset is it doesn't translate as well to TV, to linear direct, as some other sports. American football is almost made for TV. And I don't mean to denigrate American football, but it is designed, the breaks in the actions, everything to deal. Whereas hockey is much more of a continuous sport, kind of like
soccer.
The other football, right? Soccer, right. Yes, exactly. And so we find, and we've done experiments, we actually can A-B test this, is you're much more likely to fall in love with the, forget fall in love, you're much more likely to enjoy the sport if you come see it a couple of times. So it's a little bit like the freemium model. If we can get you to experience what it is to feel the energy of live sports, even if it's not our own game, of course, it's better if you come to our building, et cetera, then you recognize, oh, this is a really interesting sport. And you start getting more interest. And then you grow from there. And then it's like, oh, well, can we get you back for a single game? Or is there a pack of 5 or 10 games? And so if immediately you say, buy a season ticket membership, I want you to pay for 42 games, no one's ever going to be interested in that. In the same way, you know, enterprise software, when it says, here, there's a $10 million deal, please sign, you know, freemium works, actually.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the analogy that's always brought up is like asking someone to marry you at the bar, as opposed to like buying a drink and getting to know someone and kind of, you know, that there's a whole period of getting to know each other. And I think it's, you know, in acquisition of a customer, that makes a lot of sense as well.
Sean, you're dating yourself. Nobody goes to bars to pick up people anymore. It's all done on apps now.
Swipe left, swipe right.
Yes, exactly.
How much of the future of your organization then is about getting fans in physically in seats versus into the technological ecosystem of Sharks or entertainment?
So this is the question that we debate, I'd like to say on a daily basis, but it's probably an every other day or a multiple times a week basis as well. Because one of the growth metrics is clearly a traditional growth metric of revenue. Come on, it'd be silly to say that revenue doesn't matter. Although I will tell you, we're community-based. Virtually all the profit we make, we put back into the local community. So we profit isn't the primary motive, but we want to recoup our costs and we want to spend more. So our costs will go up as we recoup them as well. And so the traditional approach for revenue growth would be, how do we get more butts in seats? How do we make sure that every ticket to every event is sold? How do we sell more, create more events? There are 50 or 60 hockey games a year, but there are 50 or 60 concerts a year. There are family events, et cetera. We have Disney's on Ice coming, Harlem Globetrotters. You know, we do 140 to 160 events a year. So we could ask ourselves, can we do 365 events? Or can we do it not just at nighttime, but during the day? We rent ice time for people to learn figure skating. But all those are constrained. Ultimately, there's only so many days in a year and so many hours. And so the question is, how do we think digital first rather than digital afterwards? We've done a decent job of streaming those things, of extending into the digital world. But now we're trying to say, can we create revenue bases which are digital first and maybe don't have a physical incantation? As an example, we started the largest online 3x3 e-gaming tournament a couple of years ago. I think the last tournament, there were 180 teams. So far, we're intentionally not monetizing this, but we're streaming it on Twitch. The commentary goes on Discord, all that. Our brand is strong enough that we can extend in that space. We call this, by the way, these new initiatives, we call them Think Beyond the Rink, because the rink is the physical constraint. How do we think beyond it? So I'm not going to say the word metaverse. I think I promised that at the beginning of this. So
you just said it.
But how do we create digital first activations? Another example, you know, hockey players are famous for nutrition and workouts. Does it make sense to partner with a nutrition or a digital delivery company, one of those apps, to actually have the can you become a hockey player kind of thing? It's been voted, other than boxing, the hardest sport for people to lay. So it's a good cardio traditioning as well. Can we share some home techniques as well? That's potentially another revenue source. Can we do a lot of incubation? We help people test new technology. So can that be another direction that we go as well? So,
I love that. Yes. I mean, it seems like as far as trailblazing on the technology side, that, I mean, there's no other sport that is more, no other professional sports team and the broader entertainment organization that's more in the center of tech. San Jose Fair. Doesn't have any other major sports team, do they?
Well, the funny thing is the San Francisco 49ers are actually only 10 miles away in a town called Santa Clara.
Right,
so
right.
One could argue they're nearby, even though sure. They're called San Francisco 49ers. Yes.
Yeah. But I just, you know, obviously just, you know, now I live in Southern California, but I spent some years living in the Bay Area, and like, you cannot escape technology in the Bay Area. You go sit in a restaurant and you want to just turn it off and have a normal conversation, but everyone around you is talking technology all the time. And so even if you're not hiring people from tech in your organization, they can't help but immerse themselves in technology.
You got it. My joke was, pre-pandemic, my Uber driver used to pitch me on business plans all the time. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you almost feel like that's, the ones that focus on kind of Menlo Park area, that's probably, they're just hoping to get a VC in the car.
Exactly.
You know, I'm curious, Jonathan, the way you're describing this sounds a lot like what people describe as omnichannel. You know, you hear this, and that's really in CPG all the time. You hear, I'm curious if that word has penetrated your organization at all in terms of how you think about this.
It does, actually. We do talk about omnichannel, and I'm hot and cold on when it comes to omnichannel, because at least in my history, and I spent a lot of time helping retailers, and actually lived on site in the world's biggest retailer for early in my career, which we won't use their name necessarily. So I've been indoctrinated a lot on the concept of omnichannel, and to the extent that omnichannel becomes exact same experience on every channel, I'm not sure that's appropriate, because certain channels require different experiences. To the extent that it means recognize who you are and treat you appropriately regardless of the touch point, then I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I think Domino's Pizza has done a fantastic job with that. You know, they're really like just omnichannel geniuses in terms of like making it sort of a connected experience from one, from your phone to the store to the, and by the way, I still don't eat their pizza, but but I do respect their that they've how they've used the omnichannel metaverse.
Okay, we're gonna have more buzz phrases. Let's see if we can come up with another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Say APIs. Come on, let's say APIs.
Yeah. So that's not too far from where I want to take things.
Okay.
Not really. I want to dig in a little deeper. You mentioned kind of measures of success to some degree. I want to kind of look at, you know, particularly as you talk about kind of the diversity of the organization. There's a lot of different things going on, and it's not a particularly large organization from what I can see. So how do you actually keep people all pointed in the same direction enough so that you get the kind of collective momentum of people working together? Are there kind of metrics around that help you know what's going on and keep people focused on moving those metrics? Or just how do you think about some of that?
This week's Breakout Growth Podcast episode is sponsored by SAP. SAP helps businesses increase productivity and achieve real-time transparency with the power and flexibility of SAP cloud solutions, delivering end-to-end business transformation. If you have ambitious goals and are working to lead markets and industries, then you probably already know how important it is to align with a technology partner who will scale and drive innovation with future industry leaders like yourself. Don't rely on stitched-together solutions that don't talk to each other to manage business finances, operations, HR, suppliers, and customer relationships. Instead, leverage the flexibility of SAP's cloud-based suite of solutions. You can power all these in one place and gain unprecedented insights into the performance of your business from end to end. Whether you're on the brink of or have already achieved breakout growth success, learn more by visiting sap.com/SME.
Yeah, I like to say we're a really big brand, but only a medium-ish size company, maybe 250 full-time employees, 1,000 or so part-time employees. The 1,000 part makes us bigger than people realize, but they're part-time. So first of all, I think what you're asking is essentially my job, which is to make sure, well, to help set or to set the long-term vision. I tend to call it a BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal. And ours is to pioneer the future of sports and entertainment. It's very much of a be willing to be first, be willing to take risks, experimental mindset. I don't put the word failure in there because failure doesn't work well in our industry. So it's more about experimentation and to set current year priorities, the organizational objectives. I guess I'm also the chief strategy officer, if you will. And in some sense, my definition of success is, can I narrow the gap between what people do and what we say is important? Because reality is we all live in what I call the tyranny of the urgent, right? We have 140 or 160 events of every, people just go, yeah, I know that's what you told me what's important, but this is urgent. I got to get this done.
As someone who used to run conferences, I know like there is nothing more urgent than a live event.
Yes, exactly right. And we're essentially doing 140, 160 of those every single year. Not to mention that, you know, there are 40 practices and skating lessons a day and all this stuff. So if you can narrow the gap, in fact, I founded a company. It's the one that got acquired by SAP, whose tagline was, let's see if I can remember the tagline exactly. aligning execution with strategy. People often said aligning strategy with execution. That's backwards. That's making your strategy match what you do the other way around. Right. And there are a bunch of ways to do this. We are formal about it. So I actually publish objectives every fiscal year. Those objectives are measured with key performance indicators. Each objective typically has two KPIs, one that's more subjective and one that's more objective, one that's leading and one that's more lagging. There's a dashboard, which we update sometimes monthly, but usually quarterly. We share it with everybody in the company. So we have that. We use an SAP product called SuccessFactors to cascade those objectives to every manager and to every employee so that you have line of sight, so you know what you're supposed to do. Matt, it's not identical, right? So now you know what you do contributes to the overall company objective. And that works okay, right? But to be fair, there's still a lot of employees that go, what do I do? And so we have a lot of informal sessions. I run an Ask Jonathan Anything unstructured hybrid meeting every month where people ask me random questions. Some of them are like, how could you possibly not know this? Some of them are really good and insightful questions, but that helps course correct along the way. I give out Becker Bucks, which is harder to do in a hybrid world, but I still try. It's a $2 bill to modestly incentivize behavior, which helps us move in that direction as well. So, but more than anything else, I'm a It's the title of my own personal blog. I'm a managed by walking around kind of guy. And so, you know, we're only four locations. They're within 50 miles or so. So it's easier than when I ran a multinational organization. But just, you know, getting people to think forward, which is hard because sports is about traditions. Sports is about thinking backwards and getting us to and say it's the future that we worry about as opposed to just the event that's happening is part of my job.
And I think it's something I hadn't really thought a lot about till you start talking there. But obviously the pandemic has affected so many businesses from like hybrid workforce or fully remote. But clearly in the live event space, I used to run growth and marketing in the early days at Eventbrite, and so kind of following the journey of a company that focuses on ticket sales like that, you know, in addition to having an event that I used to be at that's been all online ever since. How has that kind of changed some of the things you've talked about in terms of like how do you keep momentum going through a pandemic, and then particularly the management by walking around, clearly not possible that people are all remote.
Although I do manage by zooming around now.
I'm going to actually zoom around a little faster.
Yeah, fair enough. Uh-huh. Nice pun there. Sorry, Sean. So look, I personally believe the live entertainment business was the hardest hit by the pandemic. People often talk about restaurants, but many restaurants, and I get it, a lot of restaurants closed, and I feel very badly for them, but many restaurants pivoted to takeout, and at least that was a way to keep
I saw a lot of restaurants actually start to do better as they moved into parking lots and got noticed.
Exactly right. And, you know, many of them partnered with third parties to get them on. And so there is a model. I'm not saying it's perfect for everybody. We were shut completely. We were, I think, one of only a few, maybe a handful of sports teams in the U.S. that couldn't even play in our own building. Forget not with no fans. Actually, the players weren't allowed in the building as well. So we relocated to Arizona for some period of time as well. Talk about a physical disruption, not just a digital disruption. And then we were let back in the building after a couple of months. It was zero fans. And of course, remember, this disintermediated show talk fund, we don't make money with just watch me on TV. And TV ratings went through the roof. That's great. Doesn't really do much good for me as well. And then when things were really allowed back in, we had to prove that people were vaxxed, were tested, et cetera. And so we pivoted and partnered with Clear and actually worked on creating a proof of vaxxed to get back in the building. Unfortunately, the proof characteristics changed all the time. The good news there is it taught us how to be a lot more experimental, how to think about what you might say time to market, time to value rather than perfect, because we were very much, to use an old trope, we were very much an operational excellent organization for decades. Which is, if you're going to put on a hockey game, the hockey game's not going to be that fundamentally different. Let's harden it in such a way that we put it on exactly the same way 41, 50 times a year and do it over and over again. Let's worry about every single corner case. Now we've recognized, can't do that. Let's get it 60% right and then just adjust on the fly. And that experimental mindset has worked really well. The second thing it's forced us to do is to recognize almost every sports team in hockey, for sure, and other sports, lives on the butts and seats. And so we went deeper into the digital partnership world, which is how do we actually use our brand to help other teams and other organizations tell their brand story? So one example I'll give you, because it's relatively recent, is Adobe has become a new partner of ours since the pandemic hit. Now, Adobe is not really interested in bringing its partner. I mean, maybe they do this as well, but the primary reason is not to bring customers out and have them sit in a suite and wine them and dine them, which is the traditional model of selling a suite. But rather, they know that we are attracted a very creative audience. I told you we recreate our logo a lot. So they want us to do that with the Adobe suite of tools and extend beyond traditional artists, but actually go for the next generation of kids, particularly kids that can't afford to get access to the Adobe suites. So now using our brand, we can partner with schools. Yes, it gets Adobe into that. They grow the use of Creative Studio over time as well, but it's authentically through our brand and getting people to reinterpret our logo. We've also partnered with a local bank who would love to get their checking accounts, but they're not nearly as big as the very large, well-known banks that throw billions at them, right? They can't go into a school and say, get our checking account. But we built them a digital literacy platform based on being a general manager. do you trade this player? Do you draft this player? Because you fix that, which is really just budgeting in disguise, right? But they'll play our game as a 10, 12, 13-year-old because they want to know about who, what player. Oh, by the way, that gives them a little bit of affinity with this third-party brand. So those are the growth trajectories that we're going on, which don't require butts and seats. They right. think beyond the rink.
And as you talked about, sports traditionally is pretty backwards and tradition looking, and being able to have the disruptive, that all the negativity that comes with the pandemic, but the disruptiveness of just not running around with your clothes on fire and just the event management side of things, to actually have a minute to step back and say, gosh, what can we do? So if there's any kind of embracing some of the digital pieces that you've talked about, like there was a time to more time to think about those things for the last couple of years.
Well said, Sean. The old trope again, don't let a crisis go to work. Waste. This was devastating on us economically. I mean, let's not be clear. We lost a ton of money, but at least out of that gave us a chance to shift and think about it. And, you know, people are starting to come back to live events again. I don't say that everyone's back to 100%, but it's growing back there as well. It'll get back to mostly where we were. But then we also have this new thing that allows us to grow into markets we never would have had a chance to do 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, we didn't have a Twitch channel before the pandemic, right? I mean, we knew it was important, but we didn't really have the time or energy to actually do it.
So I wanted to ask you, Jonathan, when you think about you mentioned that you're kind of actually a small organization, even though people would think that sports organizations are huge. I was curious for you, and going back to Sean's question about, how do you align people? How do you get everyone, whether it's with a metric or, pointed in the same direction? How do you think about that when you have, you have employees who are at the concession stations where actually they are maybe the most important representatives of your brand? How do you get them to project the brand and the values and these things that you're trying to express to a larger audience?
Well, look, I'm not going to suggest that a part-time worker paid $20 an hour, et cetera, is going to look at my dashboard and go, oh, look, your customer satisfaction index is trending down in F&B, and therefore I should be smiling more. That's silly. I mean, maybe the supervisor, maybe, but probably not even there. So there are a couple things that we do. First is we've created some cultural touchstones, if you will. We call them our pioneering principles, because remember, my BHAG is pioneer the future of sports and entertainment. There are 8 of them. I'm not going to try to go through all of them on this podcast, but those are the cultural norms that we're trying to establish, which we feel are a little bit different than what traditional sports and entertainment done, but not such a huge stretch that people go, I can't possibly get there. So I'll give you a simple example of one, which is team success. I'm going to set it backwards. It's hysterical. Team success is more important than individual success. That's one of our pioneering principles. So then we talk about it during training, because we do a lot of training with both full and part-time workers. What does that mean? I mean, the classic example is we draw analogies on ice. If you score 4 goals, but the team loses, that's not a reason to celebrate, even though scoring 4 goals is an incredibly rare feat, right? If your stand sells more than some other stand, but that other stand is shut down because of a power problem that you knew about but didn't say anything, that's not a reason to celebrate as well. So we draw parallels all anchored in these 8 things. Another anchor thing is say what you mean and then do what you say. Why say what you mean? Because a lot of people don't want to speak up. They don't have the voice, but we want to give them the voice to say, it's okay to say something. It's okay to disagree with your boss. It's okay to say, I'm not sure this is right. But once we all agree on something, none of this public compliance and private defiance. Commit and let's go. Now let's do what you said you're going to do. So my point to you is we do a lot of what I would call role playing, all anchored in these 8 principles. And if we do this right, then the metrics go up. But honestly, managers get the metrics, individual employees, it's hit and miss. You can't expect every person to do that.
But I'll be honest with you, because I've spent the last week at Disney World, and I don't think any organization is better at doing this than Disney when it comes to, they call everyone their cast members, and it's amazing. It's funny. We ran into 3 guys who were, they did a program when they were in college where they came to Disney. They were from the UK. One, they said they were a bad joke. One guy was from England, one guy was from Scotland, one guy was from Ireland. And I started chatting with them about their, they came back because they're friends and they wanted to reunite at Disney World every year or two, because they love it so much. And I was asking them about their experience. And even though they're 5 years removed from this program, the way they talked about Disney, it was like they were selling to my daughter the experience, even though they owed nothing to it anymore. And I think organizations that are intentional about it, and I think that's what your Touchtones are all about, organizations that are intentional in getting everybody on the team to think about the end user experience and the value you create, they're the ones that succeed with it. So it's interesting to hear how you're approaching it. And while you say it's hit and miss, I'm sure it's a lot better than a lot of teams out there that aren't thinking about it that way.
Yeah, well, my standards are high. So, but again, celebrate the wins as well. And so another one of our those Touchtones is push for more, but don't forget to celebrate the wins, because you got to balance the, not everyone deserves a trophy. I'm not trying to get back to that, et cetera. But that when you make a breakthrough, let's make sure we properly celebrate it. But then don't rest on your laurels, because continuous improvement is part of what we're trying to get done as well.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
There's definitely some good sports analogies there of just like, yeah, you let down your guard, you fall behind again, like all of those pieces. But speaking of sports, I mean, obviously this is a growth podcast. Most of the listeners are going to be into tech companies and growth in tech companies. What is it about an organization like Sharks Sports Entertainment that would make it attractive for someone to think about trying to have a growth role in your type of organization?
Well, I guess if you want to live in Silicon Valley, because the downside of my business is it's tough to be hybrid, right? I mean, I had an interesting conversation at a game the other night with a ticket taker that said, I want to work from home. And I said, I used to be a chief digital officer. I traveled around the world helping people think through digital transformation. I'm not sure how you can do your job from the comfort of your living room. There's certain
unless you're
jobs
remote controlling a robot, and then eventually AI is going to do that.
There are certain roles that just have to be in person, and live intent has a disproportionate. So if you like the buzz of Silicon Valley, if you like being around people, there's great. But we are literally trying to be at the forefront of disrupting what it means to run a sports and entertainment franchise. And what I tell people is, and you may even ask me this, so I'll because I don't know where you're going with this, I'll preempt the answer, which is I don't know what the future looks like. I have some ideas, but the point is I'm not trying to fix to a destination. I say want to pioneer. Pioneers don't have maps to how to get to the Oregon coast, right? There was nobody geofencing and saying, no, turn left at this river and then go down this, right? You're heading in a general direction, followed some by guidance, and then you figure out as you go. And when things that work, you do more of. Things that don't work, you reset. And so if you've got a pioneering mindset and your goal is to help us figure out different growth trajectories, you're a fantastic fit. If you are I need a map to find the journey, we probably don't have a map to give you.
Right. And I got to assume, I mean, before we got started here, mentioned that my nephew has started working at the Sharks just a couple of months ago. But yeah, he has a master's degree. He has a lot of different choices. But as someone who grew up as an athlete, the ability to work in sports and entertainment was something that was so compelling for him that the Sharks was a very attractive organization. And I've got to imagine that's a big draw for a lot of people, particularly young people.
Yeah, so definitely. And I would say disproportionately, we hire people in their 20s. I don't have the exact stats, but it's more than 50% of the staff, I would say. But much like we learned over the decades that musicians actually make pretty good engineers and developers, it turns out athletes make good disruptive thinkers. I never realized that before because they're used to pushing themselves beyond their own physical and mental boundaries. But they're used to thinking, why can't I run a little bit faster? Why can't I skate? I saw this other person do something. Why can't I try that as well? And that why can't I mental model as opposed to I can't when it's untapped in the business world, but they've never been shown how to do business world works really well.
Yeah. And I actually have a friend who has built a few successful companies, And he's all about hiring former athletes, also just because they're grinders.
That's true.
A lot of them are, waking up early, working all through school, and then continuing to work on their craft in a sport. So there's other benefits to hiring, but he hadn't actually talked about the sort of pushing the limits and thinking outside the box side of athletes. But that's another really good point there.
Yeah. And to be fair, as much as I love grinders, which I do, we're not a tech startup in the sense that we're not pushing for an IPO 3 or 4 years from now. We're not public and have the quarterly milestones on this. And so what I do caution is about burnout. So we tend to go episodic, which is, let's sprint for 30 days and then treat this as a long distance race for the next 45. And we do that. That's better for muscle training also, as we probably know. It's not a every night you got to be doing this till midnight kind of thing.
Yeah, that's my preferred way to work as well. I'm always, I tend to over commit myself and I love it and I thrive on it. And then I need a break and I take some time off. And that's the mundane doing the same thing over and over again can burn people out. So that's cool that you're bringing that as part of the value for people to join the organization.
I imagine it takes kind of two different mindsets to be successful in your organization, because you are event driven, right? You do need those people who are passionate about administration, and at the same time on the digital sort of transformation or whatever we want to call it front, you need those people who are all about the next experiment, the next ideas, and then you have to figure out ways to. Do you find yourself being very thoughtful about sort of understanding the motivations that each of the people on your teams have and saying these people love the administrative side. I've got to give them those opportunities. These people are the growth people. I've got to give them those opportunities and kind of shifting around based on that motivation.
I've learned that over the last 4 years. To pretend that I knew that when I showed up here would be, revisionist history. But I also start pairing people up. Someone who's a little bit more disruptive in growth sometimes forgets how to scale, right? We've seen that in the tech world as well, right? Operational people understand scale issues much more, but they don't always understand how to do rapid change. And so I've found that by
next
pairing them together,
people.
That's right, exactly right. I mean, I can give you an example, which is because of the pandemic, we're doing less person-to-person interaction. So we went to cashless, and so operationally that was easy, right? Just stop, whoa. So a growth mind person said, but we want to make sure that we don't disenfranchise that part of our audience that may not have credit cards, right? And they rely on cash because that's a big fraction of our fan base as well. So I was like, okay, well, how do we solve that in scale? Let's build reverse ATMs. So reverse ATMs are ones where you put cash in.
Interesting.
And a Sharks branded debit card comes out, right? But then the growth, right? But now it's like, but why does that Sharks branded card only have to work in our building?
Right. That's make it a general debit card.
Now make it general. Now suddenly we have a bunch of data. Okay. So now again, growth mindset, maybe we make a choice, which is you can pay the 3% fees and have your data anonymized, or we'll pay the 3% fee and we get to use your data in the anonymous way as well. So there again, would an operational person come up with that? Probably not, but they would have fixed all the ATMs and et cetera. But would a growth person have recognized how to do it across 9 facilities, et cetera? Bring those two together and magic happens.
I love that. And then they have a little brand interaction after the game can essentially have Sharks merchandise on them at all times.
That's exactly right. And so now I start thinking about things like share of wallet. Do I care how much money, and should I be a store of value? And do I take this digital card and actually make it your entertainment card? You guys might be just close to old enough to remember there were physical entertainment books back in the day.
Yeah.
do I create the digital entertainment book? And then if you use that Sharks branded card all over San Jose, do you get a discount, et cetera?
Right. No, I like it. Yeah.
And now, do I back those with tokens? And do I put them on? So this could go for a long way, but doesn't have to solve all that on day one.
Right, right.
We want to dream.
It's about thinking about where can you take it. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
I just love the way that the fact that it sounds to me like the way you approach leading this organization is that all these ideas, there's the only bad ideas are the ones that we don't prioritize for experimentation. Right. It's a really cool outlook. And I think part of my hope in coming into this conversation is that we'd be able to share with our audience that growth is different across different industries and organizations, but that doesn't mean that a lot of the principles don't still apply. And I think you've really shown us that very much today. And I think your background probably speaks to that. I know Sean's going to want to wrap up with this question we always ask, but I have one question before we get there, which is if you're successful in this role and you look back, let's say 3 years from now, you can, if you want to change that date, feel free, but 3 years from now, what does the Sharks organization look like then where you say, I've killed it. I did what I set out to do.
Yeah. So I could hide behind my earlier answer and say, you know, pioneers don't have answers to where they're going. They just head west, et cetera. That would be unfair. I think I have a concrete answer and many examples to what is our organization. Are we an entertainment organization, which is, I think they are on that path though. Are we a content organization or are we actually a data organization? Because I think the last thing I just said is it may be that we're capturing the amazing profiles of the 3.5 million people that frequent our 4, soon to be 5 or 6 facilities. I'm not sure what that is. And so my get out of jail free answer is we recognize that we're in a fight for share of entertainment. In the same way that retailers talk about share of wallet, we start talking about and measuring share of entertainment as our growth metric. And we recognize, you know, Netflix is both a partner and an enemy, you know, that streaming, et cetera, that getting people off their couch is both a good and a bad thing. And if we can't get them off their couch, then we need to entertain them when they're on the couch. And so the conversation I have with you and others in 3 years now are share of entertainment conversations, as opposed to how'd your hockey team do last night?
Right.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So one last question then. In terms of the best job I've ever had, you've had quite a career. Where does this rank up there?
This is my dream job. I went through an IPO, 2 companies got acquired. I've started some stuff. I've done a lot of, been lucky enough. I grew up in a tiny little town, 13 people in my high school graduating class. So I never thought I'd get to where I am, but this combines interacting with customers, seeing little kids smile when they come in the building, experimenting with technology, not having to deal with Wall Street on a quarterly basis, being able to grow in a sport I love. Sure, there's some bad parts of my job. There's bad parts of every job on planet, but this is my dream job.
That's awesome.
So I thanks to my boss if he's listening for giving me
a job. So Ethan, you're reminding me of a friend of mine who is always dangerous to go out with because he always wants to have the final, and then the final. The nights get sometimes long on that last drink. But the question we like to wrap up with is what do you feel like you understand about growth now that maybe you didn't understand a couple of years ago?
So I think there's a difference between intellectually understanding something and feeling it every single day. We as growth practitioners, we tell the story that growth is incremental, that measuring it month by month and looking at that is the only way it works. And in reality, growth is a sputter. It jumps up and then it flatlines for a while and maybe even dips down. It's not a hockey stick either. Everyone always likes to draw the hockey stick. It is. And so the periods during which growth is not working are the best periods to double down on your strategy. Too many of us get discouraged by the non-periods of growth. Probably the smartest thing that we did, and thank you to my boss, our owner, for allowing me to do this, is we doubled down on growth during the pandemic when everybody else was laying off 50, 70% of their workforce, when they were going back in cocoon. We said, heck with it. Let's grow into this thing. And double downing on growth when everything looks terrible is something that we all intellectually know, but we had 10 years of so much amazing economic growth. We never tested our mettle. And just remind me, when things are bleakest is when time to try the hardest.
Mm. So yeah, my biggest takeaway from this whole conversation is just how cool it is to take someone from a really different background than what you would traditionally have in leadership in sports or wherever it might be. But when you take someone from one type of background and you move them into an area of leadership in a totally different area, you're going to have such fresh thinking and new ways of approaching it. And it's been really insightful to hear how you're thinking about it. And I'm, I'm much more likely to be drawn toward the Sharks as an organization now than I was before. But I got to start with hockey first, and then pick my team from hockey. But that's,
and John, just to be clear, I don't want to make, I think I said this, I'll say it again.
Yeah.
Certainly not everything we've tried at work. I would be surprised even if half of what we tried work. We can do an entire podcast on stories of things that did not work.
The point
is to try.
Yeah. I think that my assumption would be that you have a lot more things that have worked than most of your kind of organizational counterparts have even tried stuff. So, to find the things that work, you got to go through a lot of things that you try, and you get smarter with everything that works and everything that doesn't work. And so, it's really cool to see. Yeah. You know, I'll actually wrap up on one other thing that often I get the question of, so your growth approach, where have you done it outside of business? And I always
you can
bring
point
up,
to me now.
Well, I always bring up, I did coaching, youth soccer coaching. And I used to, my kids would come out at 3 a.m. and I've got different lineups where I'm studying the data. And this is like recreational, where all the other coaches are like, oh, I'll just yell at the kids and they'll work harder. Where I was like constantly experimenting with lineups and thinking about, you know, what against this team, how many goals were shot against us? How many did we shoot against them? And by the time, you know, the initial season I coached, we didn't win a game for the first 4 games, but ended up being three regions, the champion of 3 regions by the end. And then, you know, just dominated the next season. And it was more of just approaching it in a different way where I didn't even have a soccer background. My wife signed me up. I said, what the heck are you doing? But I loved it. And it turned out to be one of the most enjoyable phases of my life. So I've seen kind of taking more of a tech experimental mindset and applying it in sports myself. So, for any
hockey fan that might be listening, what Sean just described was putting your lines in a blender, mixing them up, which sometimes feels random to fans, but not. You're really doing a sophisticated version of A/B testing to see what might come out the other end.
Yeah. And it's combining that with the psychology of how do I make sure that every single kid on this team has confidence and loves the game and understands what their strengths are and feels proud of those strengths and all the people management side of things, but at the same time using data and experimentation to just figure out different formulas that ultimately yield the better result.
Well, Jonathan,
so
this
awesome.
Has been great.
Yeah, Jonathan, this has been a really fun conversation, and we're excited to keep watching and see how you and the rest of the Sharks organization do in the coming months and years.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
We might have to have you back.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks for listening to the Breakout Growth Podcast. Please take a moment to leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And while you're at it, subscribe so you never miss a show. Until next week.